got a good feeling and feel no pain at all on Friday, huh? Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. It is Friday. My name is Mike Malloy. It's about 7 past the hour. Welcome to tonight's program. And in about, we're going to do this after the break, the bottom of the hour, right? We're going to have our first podcast trivia. Tonight we will be giving away, thanks to an anonymous donor, two, count them, two free podcast subscriptions to the program. And we're going to give one at the bottom of this hour and then the bottom of the last hour of the program tonight. All you have to do is dial in once we open the phones. And they're not open right now. So we will ask you a trivia question. All you have to, and it's multiple choice tonight. So all you have to do is come up with the right answer. And then we'll put you back on hold. And Kathy will get the pertinent information. And you have a one-year subscription to the Malloy podcast and all the other perks that go along with that. And there aren't many, but there's a couple. You know, we don't have Limbaugh Hannity's money. We operate pretty close to the vest. But anyway, coming up in about 30 minutes, you'll have a chance to get one. The radio station in Sacramento, KRXQ, 98.5 FM, the one that has the three people in the morning, Rob, Arnie, and Dawn. And Rob and Arnie attacked transgendered children. When was it? A week ago? Well, they came out, was it yesterday? And they apologized for making offensive comments about transgender people. They'd been off all this week after reaction to the comments they made on the 28th of May about, I guess that was 2 weeks ago, about transgender teens. So on that broadcast, these two clowns labeled transgender people freaks and weirdos. And after they made those comments, and people in the Sacramento area and all over the country apparently raised enough hell about this, they started to lose their advertisers, including McDonald's, Bank of America, Carl's Jr. The list went on and on. Local and national companies decided to hell with this. You know, we're just not going to go here. So on their apology yesterday, Rob Williams said, I quote, our audience made clear that we had made it seem that we endorse or allow or encourage the harming and abuse of children, the bullying and vilifying of those who are different, and singling out of transgenders for harm. Oh, that's nice, Williams. That's nice. Our audience made it clear that we had made it seem. You know, I've got to ask, what do people like this on these shock jock morning shows that you find in almost every major market, what do these half-asses use for brains? I mean, really, these two should be fired. They should have been fired the moment it happened. The program director should have walked in and said, clean out your desk, get the hell out of my radio station. Nothing happened until the advertisers started to pull. Oh, well then, I guess we better say something. And then what they say? Our audience made it clear. They didn't come out and say, you know, after realizing what we said sounded like it comes from a bunch of hate-mongering asses, we've decided to apologize. No, of course not. Our audience made it clear that we had made it seem that we endorse bullying of those who are different. You made it seem that way. You didn't make it seem that way, you couple of jerkwads. You said it. You stated four square in favor of hurting people. Kids. Because of their gender dysphoria. You couple of half-wits. And then when they say, bullying and vilifying of those who are different and singling out of transgenders for harm. Transgenders? No. No, Mr. Williams, they're not transgenders. They're children. They're goddamn children. And if they're adults, they're a man or a woman. They're not transgenders. Couple of freaks. So Williams then said, I want you to very clearly understand that I proudly and fully apologize for those comments completely. Ooh. Why? You know they don't mean it. You know these snakes, they are so typical of morning jock, shock jock shows in so many cities. They don't give a damn. They couldn't care less about kids. They couldn't care less about anybody. The only thing they care about is when the advertisers say, okay, we're out of here. Bye-bye. And even then, I'm sure the program director had to go in and say, okay, weasels, you're going to have to go on the air. I know you both hate this, but you're going to have to go on the air. Try to sound sincere, will you? Oh, okay, boss, we'll try to sound sincere, but we really don't give a rat's ass, you know. Yes, we know, but you better get on there and apologize anyway so we can get the advertisers back. Oh, yes, sir. The gay and lesbian Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD, their director of media said, quote, we are encouraged that the hosts use their platform as a forum for education about these issues in a way that resonated with listeners, end quote. Really? Okay. Well, as long as GLAAD is satisfied, then I guess everybody should be satisfied, right? Okay. But, you know, I just wonder, in so many cities where people tune in, they're on their way to work, they listen to these clowns. Oh, I know kids should never listen. But you know, supposing dad is ferrying the kids to school and he has these two creeps on. And the kids hear this. You know, what do the kids think? I know. What do the kids think? Oh, come on, Malloy. God damn, that's useless. What do you mean what the kids think? What do the kids think about your program? I would assume that most kids don't listen to my program. And we don't attack children on this program. And we don't attack people because of who they are on this program. Unless it's the Bush crime family. Unless they are torturers. Unless they are right-wing airheads. Then you're damn right we attack them. But, you know, you think about kids who hear this. And maybe they're not in the car with dad on the way to school. Maybe they just hear it. Maybe on a school bus and they have a, some digital radio with it. Hey, listen to these guys, man. Damn, this is 98.5. Listen to them. Listen. Ah, they're getting all over those little queerhead kids. What is it with right wingers and bullies like these two guys on radio? Why aren't they fired? Now that they've made their apology, now the station's general manager or the network they work for ought to walk in and say, thanks for the apology. Now get your asses out of my radio station. And don't worry about losing a job. They'll be picked up, boom, that quick. That quick. Because you know what? Most of these syndicators and stations and networks, where it concerns morning shock jocks, they don't give a damn what they say. All they want is the numbers. Get us the numbers, boys. And girl, get us the numbers, get us the listeners, do anything you have to, because if we get the listeners, we get the advertisers. Come on, boys, do it. Can we talk about transgendered kids? We don't care what you talk about, just do it. Until the advertisers leave. And then, all of a sudden, one of these half-asses comes out and says, our audience made clear that we had made it seem that we endorse or allow or encourage the harming and abuse of children. That is specifically what you said. Now, this just proves the deeply embedded realization that I carry around with me all the time, and you should at this point, too, that every single right-winger or shock jock type, they are essentially just pissy little cowards. That's all they are. Cowards. If you saw one of them on the street and went boo in his face, he would probably wet himself. But they pick on, like Michael Savage in San Francisco, you know, they pick on autistic children, they pick on transgendered children, they pick on Jews, they pick on Muslims, they pick on women, they pick on people that they figure, well, they, you know, they're not going to do anything. Oh, they're not going to do anything. Man, well, they're right. Nobody's going to do anything until the advertisers say, you know what? We don't want to be associated with this steaming pile of garbage, so we're out of here. Then they say our audience made us realize. Your audience? No, no, no. Your advertisers, you cowardly little bastards.
speakers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Remember, was it last night, Kathy, we played the Shepard Smith sound? Talking about the hate mail that he gets, or not the hate mail, but the poisonous emails that come into Fox News from the Muslim haters and the Jew haters and the women haters and the child haters and the liberal haters and the progressive haters. They all come from this base of psychopaths and sociopaths who make up probably 95% of the viewers of Fox News Channel. The other 5% are, you know, people that would want to look when they pass a multi-car pileup on the expressway and see how many corpses they can find on the side of the road. And I'm probably in that group. So Shepard Smith, the other day made some, salient observations. And read one of the emails on the air, just the poison, the hatred, like, you know, Obama is a Muslim. Obama doesn't have a birth certificate. I mean, just the kind of psycho stuff that you get on Fox and WorldNet Daily and the rest of these right wing garbage dumps, the Limbaugh program, you know, the usual list. Well, now there's an effort to get him fired. PoliticsDaily.com is reporting that, conservatives are calling for Shepard Smith to be fired. WorldNet Daily and Rush Limbaugh have aimed at Smith. So have conservative hate blogs like Atlas Shrugs, where someone named Pamela Geller wrote the following, quote, "Shep sucks, and Shep has always sucked, and it's time to get rid of the deadwood. I don't know where he gets off talking down to us conservatives, but it's not his job to defend Obama and to try to tie African-American racism into this Jew-hating incident." Oh, my God. And then you got to wonder why Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele has stopped referring to the Republican Party as a big tent, right? Yeah, of course you do. Well, you knew that was going to happen. Shepard Smith, who has the temerity to mention the insanity, the crazy, and Shepard Smith is a conservative, but he is a legitimate, bona fide, self-identified. I don't know what his politics are, but he calls himself a conservative. But he is like a lot of people in the who consider themselves conservative, want nothing to do with the Michelle Malkin, Rush Limbaugh, Michael Steele, Michael Savage axis. They don't want anything to do with it because those are not conservatives. Those are sick people, very, very emotionally disturbed, sick individuals, and especially apparently this person Geller who wrote that. So Shep shares one email and makes some comments, and they're on him like white on rice. It's incredible, isn't it? It's just incredible. Oh, well. Who wrote this? Warts? Mike, ever notice that almost all of these so-called shock jocks are also conservatives? Typical of conservatives to pick on those who can't defend themselves. When someone is there to defend themselves, these cowards won't dare open their mouths. Well, that's exactly the point. I have yet to meet a media conservative type person who is not a complete bedwetting, thumb-sucking, hair-twisting coward. And if you walk up to them and threaten to slap them silly, because of their idiocy or something they said, they collapse, they melt, they run to the other room, they hide. I've had that experience with these thugs at these stupid ass radio conventions I used to go to, where 95% of the people there would be these right wing cowards. And it's very easy to intimidate them. It's just so easy. You know, it's two ways intimidating. Tom Hartman uses one way where he's just 1,000 times smarter than any one of them. Or there's my way, which is just to show them the club I have or open my coat so they see the gun and then start frothing at the mouth and saying things like, "Get out of my sight, you sick son of a bitch." That usually makes them run. I know Hartman's way is better, but mine is more fun. I'm just kidding about the gun. I don't, you know, I don't do that. Oh, my God. All right. We have a break coming up here. When we come back from the break, we are going to, we're going to wait until we come back. And then we will release the phones. Give the phone number. Why? Well, everybody knows the phone number, Kathy. Let's, as soon as we get into this break, we'll give the phone number. I mean, we'll release the phones. The number, of course, is 877-996-2556. That's 877-996-2556. And, if we get you on the phone, if you can get through the crush, we will ask a question, and the first two right answers win gift podcast subscriptions from an anonymous donor to the Malloy program. Stay with us. It's time once again for the Mike Malloy Show podcast trivia. Our guests tonight are three hapless individuals who happen to call in and are waiting on the telephone. We are going to take one of those guests in a moment and ask him or her a very pertinent question, the answer to which will win, the correct answer to which, I should say, will win that particular contestant a free Mike Malloy podcast subscription. All right, cut the music. God, I'm just in absolutely the wrong business. We're going to begin with Anderson here, who is calling in from Mooresville, Indiana. Is that right, Anderson?
Good evening, Mike. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right. All right, you ready?
I am.
Wait just a second. Our announcer, our producer would like to.
I just wanted you to get to know Anderson a little bit before you just went straight into the question.
Oh, okay. Anderson, are you married?
I'm not. I'm single.
Do you have a significant other?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. And I'm actively looking in case any Mike Malloy fellow feminine listeners would like to call in.
Do you like the color blue?
No, but I would advise you, Mike, to have a glass of wine. It's Friday night, after all. I know it's early in the show, but why not?
That's very true. All right. You are pretty good at political trivia, I take it.
Oh, I'm a master.
All right.
I consider myself.
All right. Here we go. I will give you the question. Oh, Jesus.
I'm
what
sorry.
Now?
Well, no, I just wanted to let everybody know because we said this last night, but we did not reiterate it or reiterate it, as Bush would say today. These are all Bush related because I miss Chucklenut so much. All the questions, just so you know, just get your brain in Bush mode. They're all Bush related.
Thank you.
All right.
Let's
have it.
All right. Hold on just a second, Anderson. Is there anything else?
Anderson, why do you want a podcast subscription? Do you listen to the show regularly and now you're tethered to your computer and you would like the freedom?
I listen via XM satellite radio. I don't actually know how a podcast works, but my father is a fervently conservative right-wing Rush Limbaugh listener, and I would love to forward this subscription
to him. Well, you have a computer, don't you?
I do.
Well, all you have to do, once you have a subscription, you just go to the MikeMalloy.com website and download. You'll see how to do it. I'll be there. Download the podcast of any particular program. You'll be able to do this now all year long. So if you hear a program that you like on XM, go to my website, and you'll be able to download a particular program and without the commercials, and then you can email it to one of your right-wing crazed associates, all right?
Oh, outstanding. So you don't have to have an iPod to listen to this. You can download and listen via computer.
Oh, yeah. You just listen on your computer.
Yeah.
A podcast, yeah, it'll download to the iPod. It'll download into all different... any MP3 player, it'll download into your computer. It'll download just wherever you want it to go.
That sounds easy enough.
Yeah, so you got it. All right, you ready? Do we have any ready music, Kathy? Do you have any, like, trembling violins or anything?
Yeah, drum roll, something, please.
All right, here we go. First question for Anderson. Who is Peter Walston? Is he A, the partially blind reporter whom George W. Bush mocked for not removing his sunglasses while addressing the president? B, the wheelchair-bound senior citizen whom George W. Bush mocked for not standing in the presence of the president? C, the CIA employee who, after delivering the bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. briefing, was dismissed by George W. Bush when Bush said, "All right, you've covered your ass, now you can go." Or D, the Iraq War amputee with whom George W. Bush tried to bond by telling him about the scratch on his arm he got during combat with a cedar while clearing brush at his answer. Who is Peter Walston?
I am going to answer C.
C? Oh, no!
Oh, did I say C?
You said C.
I could have sworn I said B.
No. Well, even B. No. All right. Well, good.
I need to pay more attention to your program.
Good try. Good try, Anderson. Thanks a lot.
Mike.
All right. Take care. All right. You see how that works? Now, shall I give the right answer? I have to ask the question again?
No. You're not going to... Is this hard? You're not going to ask the question again. So, yeah, give the answer.
The answer is... The question was, who is Peter Walston? The answer is, A, the partially blind reporter whom George W. Bush mocked when he said, "Are you going to ask that question with the shades on?" Mocked the guy for not removing his sunglasses while addressing the president. And the man was actually blind. All right, next. Who's up next? Kurt is calling from Long Beach, California, listening on KTLK. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, Mike.
What's your favorite color?
Purple.
Oh.
Blue, right, blue.
Blue, good. do you have children?
Yes.
You have a dog?
No, cat.
I don't know why I'm asking this. Kathy says, "Well, chat them up a little bit. You have to talk with them. You have to get to know them a little bit."
Get to know me, yes. You won't get to know me very well through that, but we didn't chat much.
Yeah. Let me see. What else can I ask you? Do you like dancing?
Yes, actually.
Why do you want a podcast subscription from the Malloy Show?
Well, you're one of the few people I can talk to. I mean, who I can hear on the radio who I can sort of agree with. Most of the radio, this K-Talk station, to me, they call themselves progressive, but
yeah,
to me, it's kind of like Democratic Party radio.
Oh.
I have a number of kids, and I usually don't get that much of a chance to listen to your show, so I figure I can... Once in a while, you know.
All right. Well, that's
on the computer.
That's it. That's a good idea. All right. Are you ready to play?
Sure.
Okay. Here we go.
But based on the first question, it sounds more challenging than a normal trivia question.
It is. This is challenging. They all have to do with George Bush. Here we go.
Okay.
In an interview in 2006, what did George W. Bush say was his best moment in office as president? Was it A, meeting with the proud servicemen and women in Iraq? B, visiting all the foreign countries and eating food he'd never get to eat if he wasn't president? C, catching a 7.5-pound largemouth bass in his lake? Or D, riding an Air Force One?
Oh, boy.
Was meeting with the proud servicemen and women in Iraq. B, visiting all the foreign countries and eating food he'd never get to eat if he wasn't president. C, catching a 7.5-pound largemouth bass in his lake. Or D, riding on Air Force One.
Well, I'm pretty sure he didn't say anything about visiting servicemen in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if Mouse Bass, I don't even know about that one. He seems to not have a very great culinary, distinguished palate as far as I could
right.
as I've heard about. So I believe he went, whoopee, I get to ride on Air Force One.
Oh, no!
Oh,
no, I am so sorry, Kurt. It was C, catching a 7.5-pound largemouth bass in his lake on one of those many, 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 many trips to Crawford. Oh, well.
Oh.
All right, now listen, we're going to be doing this for the next 5 weeks. And again, at the bottom of the third hour of the program. So if you can call back, you might get another shot. Okay?
All right. Well, I would get you on the radio.
All right. Thank you, Kurt.
All right. Thank
All right.
You.
Take care. Take care. I guess these are harder than I thought. So far, no winner. Oh no. All right. Here we go with number three. That would be B, who is calling from Northridge, California. Listening on KTLK also. Hi, B.
Hi, Mike.
Are you ready?
Not if there are going to be those questions. I bombed out already.
Well, here you go.
Okay, let's start. No children, some pets.
Oh, I'm not going to ask you. Okay. You know, do you like the color blue?
Off and on.
Oh, good. Okay, yawn. Okay, here we go. Complete this Bush quote, B. Quote. I couldn't imagine somebody like Osama bin Laden understanding the blank. Is it understanding A, the joy of freedom, B, the joy of eating a good steak, C, the joy of having a neighbor just like he'd like to be loved himself, or D, the joy of Hanukkah?
C.
C? Oh, no!
Oh.
No!
Oh. Subscription last year and it ran out or I kind of got booted out when you quit and I was hoping to win a new one.
Oh,
no,
darn
no
it.
Luck?
Well, the answer is D, the joy of Hanukkah.
Oh my God.
That's what he said.
Should have been the most absurd, right?
It should have been. All right, B, thank you. Excuse me. Talk show host losing his voice. Thanks, B. I appreciate your taking a shot. Excuse me? Oh, we have to go to a break. Oh, thank you, Kathy. For some reason, Kathy thinks I'm just completely out of it tonight. Well, all right. Let's go to commercials so I can come around and scream at you. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Listening to Mike Malloy podcast trivia. And now, Johnny, who are our other contestants?
Well, Mike, we have Ralph coming up here in a second. We also have Monica and Carla.
Well, that's three people, Johnny, and we're only giving away two podcasts tonight. Well, so far.
Mike, you haven't given away Diddly Squat, so, you know, what's the big deal?
Okay, let's go to Ralph, who's calling from Los Angeles. All right, Ralph, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Are you listening on KTLK or Sirius or XM or anything?
Actually, another KTLK listener.
Oh, great. Okay. They must not be playing any sports tonight. so we managed to get on the air. All right, Ralph, and why would you want a podcast subscription?
Because you act. I don't always get to listen to everything you say because of all the damn sports programming here on KTLK.
Yeah.
So this will give you a chance to catch all the stuff that gets prioritized out when I have to listen to the Lakers or the Ducks or whatever play on the radio here.
The Ducks. Yeah, I hear that. All right, Ralph, are you ready? Let me give you the question.
Okay.
On his then upcoming trip to Denmark back in 2005, what was Bush most looking forward to? A, and getting, take your time on this. A, getting a pair of those fantastic wooden shoes. B, getting a visit, getting to visit all the famous dikes. C, getting a good night's sleep on the soil of a friend. Or D, getting the chance to practice his German.
Oh, they're all so good. what was the third one?
All right, I'll go through them again. Okay. On his upcoming trip to Denmark, what was Bush most looking forward to? A, getting a pair of those fantastic wooden shoes. B, getting a visit, getting to visit all the famous dikes. And you can take that any way you want. C, getting a good night's sleep on the soil of a friend. Or D, getting the chance to practice his German.
On the what of a friend?
On the soil of a friend.
On the soil of a friend?
Right.
That's got to be it.
That's got to be it! He's absolutely right, ladies and gentlemen! All right. Way to go, Ralph. God, I was starting to think we had our questions were a little bit too difficult, but you sure got it. All right, here's the deal. I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
And Kathy will get the pertinent information for you and tell you what are you going to tell him? You just get information and then he's emailed his password. Okay. Thanks a lot, Ralph. Hold on. Here comes Kathy. All right. That's one. We have one more to give away. Kathy, you might want to put him on hold so we can do this one. Okay, just leave Ralph on hold.
No, honey, third hour. Remember, we're giving away.
I want to give away another one.
Well, we can't right now. It's first hour and third hour.
I want to give away another one!
First hour and third hour. Now, go have some warm milk, and we'll give away another one in the third hour.
You said
like
two!
We promised everyone the third hour.
You said we'd give away two.
And we will, sweetheart. We will.
I have to wait for the third hour, huh? All right. Well, Carla in Madison and Monica in Lexington, if you all don't want to hold on and just talk about regular stuff, I understand. Because you were probably calling in. You were calling in for the thing, right, Carla? Yeah, Carla's gone. And Monica, you were... Oh, no. Oh, no. She's got the radio on. Oh, okay. We're all set now. Thanks, Carla and Monica. We'll take another shot at this in about an hour and a half? Yeah, about an hour and a half. See how easy that is? Get a good night's sleep on the soil of a friend. That is so George Bush. Well, so are the other three, getting a pair of those fantastic wooden shoes, getting to visit all the famous dikes, and getting the chance to practice his German. All right. What else we got tonight now? See, this just gets the blood pressure up and you start thinking, wow, man, this is really kind of a fun, radio program. It's not the usual, Sturm und Drang, is that right? It's not the usual, oh, God, oh, no, not more death, not more suicide, not more bombing. Oh. Yeah, I know, we temporarily fool you, but then we have to go back to the real world, right? All right. Well, how about this? Let me share with you an email from Steve in Longmont, Colorado, which is a suburb of Denver, right? Steve writes in, Mike, the recent rise of hate crimes is indeed the result of the hateful right-wing radio noise that spills out over the airwaves on a daily basis. Here in Colorado, we have KOA 850, nicknamed the 850 Death Star, by author David Sirota. They broadcast 100,000 watts of right-wing crap 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. KOA can be heard in 5 states and as far as Oklahoma at night. The morning show is hosted by uber-conservative ideologue Mike Rosen. He's a snide, an arrogant little man who can't go 5 seconds without uttering a lie. Rosen is followed by the pig man, who is certifiably insane. After Rushbo comes Gunny Bob, a right-wing militant racist knuckle-dragger from hell. This is what we get in Colorado on a daily basis, and it is the formula for AM radio in every other part of the country. I want to tear my hair out every time I hear Mike Rosen rail against the so-called liberal media when he works for a station populated entirely by right-wing freaks. It's no wonder that we have a nation full of Republican zombies when you listen to the crap that goes out over the airwaves on AM radio. Thanks for keeping it real all these years, Steve in Longmont, Colorado. P.S. I just ordered a shirt and a bumper sticker from your website. Bless your heart, Steve. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 6:30 PM. Got an email here from Andrea who writes, Mike, I live in Longmont, Colorado. It is not a suburb of Denver, which is about an hour south of Longmont. We are a small town located about 20 miles northwest of Boulder. Okay. Thanks, Andrea. I love Boulder. I've never been to Longmont. Yeah, I was. Well, riddle me this, Andrea. Isn't Longmont about 8, 10, 12,000 feet up in the air? Because I think I camped there one time and woke up in the morning with a headache. Somebody said, well, that's altitude sickness. You must be from Georgia. All right, from our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2, or Bruce, however you want to put it. Tonight's missive from Prairie 2 is deadbeats pay cash. Deadbeats pay cash. Prairie 2 writes, increasingly Chinese manufacturers are finding themselves holding the bag, or rather stacks of shipping containers sitting on the dock in U.S. ports. Big box stores are often backing out on deals for goods already shipped, and the Chinese aren't happy. The American business model is starting to look far less attractive in China when you can be upwardly mobile one day and living under a bridge the next. Americans are no longer viewed as masters of the universe to model one's life after. Chinese companies are starting to require bank letters of credit or even cash up front before they will start work on an order. And when they say cash, they mean real cash, not U.S. dollars. And speaking of people with too many dollars, the Republicans are really working the street to gin up the fear of inflation. Now, you'd think that with the government and the Federal Reserve printing all these trillions of dollars, that inflation would be heating up. But consumer prices are sputtering along about the same level, despite a big spike in gas prices. The reality is declining wages, bankruptcies, a steady stream of layoffs, and a lack of confidence among those who still have a dollar to spend. This makes the threat of deflation loom ever larger. Now, the silver lining to runaway deflation is that it would put an end to the insane credit economy the Republicans have built over the last 30 years. The general consensus among economic pundits is that Obama missed an opportunity by letting the large and completely insolvent banks return their TARP loans the other day. It appears these banks have wiggled out from under government control, and Obama could have used the crisis to crack down on these pirates. But runaway deflation would make the banking upheaval last year seem like nothing worse than a shortage of free toasters at the teller window. Obama has probably decided not to waste his time trying to fix anything from this crisis and is planning for the next one. At least I hope he has a plan, because canned goods only go so far. Prairie 2. Oh. Yeah, you should see the canned goods. I took his advice. I did. Go to his website, prairie2.com, numeral 2, prairienumeral2.com. Not we, because Kathy just kind of looks at me and shakes her head with an expression of, poor baby on her face. But, yeah, I've been, every time I go to the grocery store with my little list, I get extra canned goods, you know. I do. Vegetables and fruit and beans and soup and fruit and, you know. Whew. I'm building. I've got this in the room next to the studio. There is what is turning into a larder. Do you know what a larder is? When I was a kid, my grandmother used to can everything. I lost a couple of cousins because of that. You know, they were running around one day. The next day they were gone. We just assumed grandma canned them, but she would can everything. And in the basement, they had this big old house. It was built like in 1860 or something. I don't know, in Findlay, Ohio. And, in the basement, which was all made out of concrete or stone, she had, put up all these, mason jars full of food from the garden. And, of course, when you're a kid and you go into your grandmother's spiderwebby basement that reeks of mildew and dust, and there's a room back there where the coal chute used to be, where the coal would come tumbling down that chute. This is when they used to burn coal in houses. How many people remember that? And the place is really scary down there. But there was something very comforting when my grandfather and uncles would be 5 minutes away from being home for dinner. And grandma would say, Mike, go to the basement and bring up some tomatoes. And I would go to the basement and get these great big mason jars full of tomatoes. They seemed big. They weren't. But, you know, when you're 6 years old, they seem big. I never dropped one, never smashed one, bring them up. But that was a real larder. Now, you know, everything that we have in the reserved food section of our homestead, it either says Dole on it or Hunt's or Heinz, or none of them say Grandma. What?
I have to take umbrage at that.
You do?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, you and I and Miss Molly went strawberry picking.
Oh, yeah. We've got all those strawberries. Yeah, that's true. We got, well, how many? We have 15, 20.
24.
24 jars of strawberry jam.
Yeah. And I'm about to get a bumper crop of tomatoes.
We have more tomatoes out here. We're going to have to find a Republican's house and go tomato their house.
So we will have some of Grandma's jars.
All right. That's cool. How are the peppers coming?
Peppers are looking a little peaked.
They are?
I'm not going to be able to pick a pickle peppers.
Well, see, I'm trying to do what Prairie 2 and Michelle Obama, what Prairie 2 said to do and what Michelle Obama demonstrated doing, and that is get a lot of canned goods, which we're doing. I'm not sure why, but we're doing it, and a garden. And the garden this year is really looking good.
That's because Sonny Perdue prayed for all that rain.
Sonny Perdue.
And 2 years later, God said yes.
Yep. It's the governor of Georgia. When we were at the height of the, or the peak of the drought down here, where all the reservoirs around Atlanta were drying up, and they were talking about Atlanta was just going to blow away. And Sonny and the boys prayed to the Lord to bring rain. And it took 2 years, but, you know, here it is. Thank you, Sonny. This was in the Telegraph of the UK. I'm sure it's probably somewhere in an American newspaper, but... Oh, that's right. It was in the New York Times the other day. It was a scary, scary story, I think. And the story centered in Flint, Michigan. Have you, as the Telegraph, the UK calls it, one of the poorest U.S. cities. I lived in Flint, Michigan for about 4 months in 1969, the end of 69, the beginning of 70. And as you drove into Flint, Michigan back in the day, there was a sign on, I think it was Route 23 going into Flint, Michigan. Big billboard that said, you are entering Flint, Michigan, where, I think it said 45,000 people work for General Motors. It was quite the company town. And when I lived there for about 4 or 5 months, actually it was just kind of a way station. But I was there for 4 or 5 months, the end of 70. End of 69, beginning of 70. And it was. That was the first place, believe it or not, I never saw black snow in Toledo, even though Toledo was only about 90 miles south of Flint. But the day I drove up there, I drove from Florida, Tampa, where the weather was about 80 degrees, and this was in October. I drove to Flint, and the day I got there, it was snowing black snow, or at least it seemed like black snow. Actually, it was white, but no sooner it was on the ground than it would immediately be covered with soot and all that pollution, the stuff that was in the air. Oh my God. But I remember thinking, well, here is a big success, not big, but a nice successful mid-sized city with all these people working for General Motors. And you know what it is now? Well, as the, Telegraph the UK says, one of the poorest U.S. cities. We'll tell you what they're planning there when we come back. Stay with us.
It's good news week.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, but we have some monstrous storms down here right now in the south. If the program disappears, it means we have a power failure. I've been asked to plug the official Malloy chat room at the online community. Go to MikeMalloy.com and... then what, Kathy? I'm still not real familiar with the website. Go to MikeMalloy.com and click on...
The online community.
Online community, then go to the chat room from there. Okay.
And there's new merchandise. We have, it's not... Hey, you told me to open my microphone. Now,
I did.
Prepare to be amazed. Yeah, there's t-shirts, bumper stickers, and now I believe there's also beverage holders. Maybe there's some beer cozies and some...
I thought we had cups.
Coffee mugs?
Okay. And,
yeah, we'll go look. Shoes are coming.
Shoes?
All kind of stuff. Hoodies for babies.
Shoes?
Yeah, don't you love it? I want a hoodie. I want a baby hoodie that says, "In Your Day Screaming."
Yeah, there you go.
Because, you know, it's a baby. You get it?
I got it. All right. So if I've got a request here from the people in the chat room, they're looking for a lot more folks to show up. There's what, 7, 8 people in the chat room and 10? And they're saying, come on, send some more over here so we can, have a little fun. I don't know what they're planning, but go to the online community there and go to the chat room and, check it out, okay? Or not. Flint, Michigan, one of the poorest U.S. cities, according to the Telegraph of the U.K. And like I said, my memories there is it was a thriving city in terms of jobs. General Motors employed tens of thousands of people, and the snow was black. But it has become one of the poorest U.S. cities. In the New York Times the other day, and that's apparently where the Telegraph of the U.K. got this story, although they had a reporter in Flint who filed this. But what they're doing, because of not just the this financial crisis we're dealing with right now, where people are losing their homes because they can't make their mortgage payments because of whatever the reason was, they couldn't afford it to begin with, or they were dipped and stroked into these weird loans with balloon notes and this and that and interest only, and all of a sudden, you know, the guy in the tall black hat with the thin pencil mustache comes around twirling his mustache saying, "I'm here to repossess your house." And little Nell runs screaming out the back door. You know, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not making light of it. It's horrible. You ought to see it here in Georgia. But in Flint, it's really bad because they have been in this economic downturn forever. Michael Moore's movie that came out a decade ago what was the name of that first one, Kathy? Roger and Me. The guy who at the time was the head of General Motors and would close factories and ship them off to China or Mexico. Well, not China 10, 11 years ago, but Mexico. So Flint has been dying, not of its own choice, but it's been dying for a long time. And now it's to the point where there are blocks and blocks and blocks of houses. I guess the proper word would be tracts of houses, where out of 50 or 60 homes, there might be 10 that still have people in them. City services are gone because the city of Flint has no money. The tax base is gone, so there's no money to cut the weeds in the now vacant lots where these houses sit. There's no money to replace broken streetlights. There's no money to increase police patrols to keep the drug-crazed hordes out. It's horrible. I've seen some pictures, and it's just frightening. You know, it's America. It's the heart of industrial America, what used to be industrial America. I know, black snow. But there it is. It used to provide jobs and income, middle class, everything was right there in Flint, Michigan. That's just one example. There are scores of, if not hundreds of cities just like that in the so-called Rust Belt. So what the city of Flint is doing, and this may not be a bad idea, they are raising those houses, getting rid of them, coming in with bulldozers and demolition crews and knocking them all down and these are in-town neighborhoods, letting the neighborhoods go back to kind of a primitive state, you know, no sewers, no houses, no electrical wires, no telephone poles, no light poles, no buildings, nothing, and letting it return to grassland, or maybe people will. Dig and plant plots, garden plots. This has been done it's being done in Detroit too, in the city of Detroit. But when you look at the pictures of Flint, Michigan, and realize what has happened in this country, it's, I don't know, it's just sad in a way, isn't it? Isn't it sad?
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to gain, a time to lose. A time to rend, a time to sow. A time for love, a time for hate. A time for peace.
5 before the hour. This is the Malloy Program. An hour from now, we'll do another trivia contest and give away another free podcast. Flint, Michigan, which is now has now become one of the nation's poorest cities, and they're looking at an experiment. There's a guy there, Dan Kildee. He's the treasurer of Genesee County, which Flint is the county seat of Genesee County, I believe. I know Flint sits in Genesee County, but what has happened, that city has contracted in terms of population by as much as 40%. 40%, almost half, are gone. So what they're doing is thinking about contracting the actual space of the city by as much as 40%. Now, that would require, I guess, getting people to move. If you have a what used to be a huge neighborhood with 100 homes and there's only 30 people left living in that neighborhood, what do? You go to them and say, look, we're going to buy your house from you. Where are they going to get the money for that? And ask you to move into this different house. It's just crazy. But this is what this experiment they're going to try to do. This guy Kildee outlined the strategy to Barack Obama during the election campaign when Obama was in Flint, Michigan. And he's now apparently approached the U.S. government and a group of charities who want him to apply what he's learned to the rest of the country. The government has approached him and these charities have approached him. And what they're talking about is doing this in other cities. Dan Kildee, the treasurer of Genesee County, said he will concentrate on 50 cities. 50. Identified in a recent study by the Brookings Institution as potentially needing to shrink substantially to cope with the fact that these cities don't have any money. They have nothing. They can't provide EMS service, fire service, electrical service, city lights, police, cops, street sweepers, garbage pickup, water, electricity, nothing. Think about this. I mean, Jesus. Well, this is going on. I mean, this is happening. In Detroit, that also, another city shattered by the collapse of the American auto industry. In Detroit, excuse me, there are already plans to split the city into a collection of small urban centers that'll be separated from each other by what will become countryside. I mean, that's almost impossible for me to even envision. When I was a kid growing up in Toledo, Detroit was like, I guess what New York City would have been to people living in Albany, or what Los Angeles would have been to people living in Riverside. Detroit was, at the time, it was the fourth largest city in the country. It was New York, Chicago, third largest. Yeah, New York, Chicago, Detroit, L.A. were the top four all those years ago. And Detroit, I can remember going to Detroit with my family, or when I got older, just going up there with friends. But Detroit was the Midwest magnet. People who didn't go to Chicago went to Detroit. The diversity of the population there was incredible. There was a huge Arab population in Detroit, Lebanese, Syrian, Iranian. The romance of the city had to do, and don't misunderstand how I'm using the word romance here, had to do with the fact that it was a big mafia center also. Detroit mafia ran Cleveland and Toledo and Akron and Youngstown and a little competition with the boys over in Chicago. But Detroit was this huge, vibrant, throbbing city. It was incredible. And then, of course, in the 70s, when it started to shrink and contract and the auto industry went to hell and they started coming south with the factories because there were no unions down here. And then they went even further south to Mexico because those people would work for a lot less than these people would. And these people would work for a lot less than what unionized workers work for. And you know how it goes. This is what capitalism does. Capitalism is a replacement for feudalism. That's all it is. And it was just so destructive. But Detroit, I took Kathy to Detroit about, I don't know, I guess it was in what, Kathy, 2000? When we were going to go to work for IE America, which was a network, quote, quote, owned by the UAW. And the only reason they owned this network, it wasn't a labor network. It wasn't for union members or anything of the sort. It was just they bought it. And it was mostly little stations in the South. And I wound up working for them. Well, we went up to Detroit. And there's a section right off downtown Detroit that used to be huge old mansions. And that's what I call mansions. And they're just these gorgeous big homes. And all of them abandoned. The roofs caving in, the esplanades, you know, the big stone porches out in front of these houses falling apart, weeds all over the place. It was just, oh my God, it was, and that was 9 years ago. You know, houses for sale that, had they been in livable condition, probably would have cost at the time, or the equivalent in 2009 dollars, probably $1.5 million. I'm talking about huge, huge, huge houses. And at the time, they were for sale for the equivalent of maybe 30 grand. But who wanted them? There was nobody in the neighborhoods. We even parked and got out. Some of these houses have been taken over by what appeared to be drug gangs and squatters and so on and so forth. But we got out of the car a couple of times to look at, you know, walk up these sidewalks that are crumbling, walk up the flagstones and look in at these huge ballrooms inside houses with the ceilings collapsing and the lighting fixtures had been stripped away and the plumbing was gone. And it was heartbreaking because to me, it was just absolutely heartbreaking because this was the city that when I was a kid was, oh my God, I want to go to Detroit. Our good friend Peter Werby, who does liberal talk radio, and has been a force for progressive energy in the city of Detroit for probably 35, 40 years. Pete still lives there. Peter still lives in Detroit. And matter of fact, we just talked a couple of days ago. But I hate to see this. I hate to see it happen. There is a program, the University of California, Berkeley, called Shrinking Cities in a Global Perspective. And the director of that, woman named Corinna Blaxt, is that how you say it? Said there was both a cultural and a political taboo about admitting decline in America. We're not supposed to talk about that. She said decline is a fact of life in Flint. Resisting it is like resisting gravity. The real question is not whether these cities shrink, we're all shrinking, but whether we let it happen in a destructive or sustainable way. She went on to say, places like Flint, Michigan, have hit rock bottom. They're at a point where it's better to start knocking buildings down. Yeah, here it is. Flint was the original home of General Motors. The car giant once employed 79,000 local people. That figure has shrunk to 8,000. Unemployment is 20%. And the total population has been halved. It was 250,000. It's down to 110,000. Ah, it's just, I don't know. This is stuff, I guess it's happened in this country before, but I never saw it. And you probably didn't either, unless you are old enough to have remember the Depression. But in the 50s and post World War II, when I was growing up, there were more jobs than there were people in the North, in the industrial Midwest, what is now the Rust Belt, to the extent that this great migration came out of the South where there were no jobs, great migration of blacks and whites that moved to the North to work in the factories. Matter of fact, I think they referred to it as the Great Migration. And with the movement of all those people to the North, it emptied the South. This is back when the population of the United States was about 150 million, about half of what it is now. A lot of history in the romantic or the love affair that we've had with the automobile in this country. We all did. I mean, come on, let's be real. Pollution, smolution, gas mileage, hog's nut. Just, you know, every year, show me the new cars. Show me a 57 Chevy. Show me a 55 Chevy. Oh my God, show me an Edsel. Didn't make any difference. But, an email here says, I guess we can't have homeless people living in foreclosed houses or people that got kicked out of their houses sneak back in. Best to bulldoze them into oblivion. Yeah, that's the ticket. Yeah, well, you know, why is it so necessary to knock all this stuff down? Why not? I guess because there's no jobs. You could give a house to people who are homeless, but then what? Where do they get the money to replace the floors and put up drywall and replaster and do the wiring that has been eaten or stolen, eaten by squirrels and whatever? It's too bizarre. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy. Sweep the streets I used to own.
It's about 9:30 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. John is calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas, listening on XM. Hey, John.
Hi. I talked to you the other evening.
Uh-huh.
This is John from Fayetteville.
Right, right.
I hope I'm not getting too much feedback. I have my radio low in the other room.
No, you're doing fine.
Okay. I used to go into Flint, Dearborn, and Detroit quite a bit to go into the plants to do quality control work for Ford and Chrysler. I did a lot of work moving jobs out of the United States to Saltillo, Mexico, and that area. I go back every Christmas to visit friends down there. It's a little town called Ramos Arizpe where American industry is building such might, it is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing that they're calling Freightliner Valley right next to Chrysler Valley that's about 3 miles long, and they're building cities to support the work.
And where is that? Where is that?
It's just outside Saltillo, Mexico, which is go to Monterey and up in about 80 miles up into the mountains from
oh
there.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's south of Laredo, a couple hundred miles.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, all I'm saying is if you go there and look at it, every year it gets stronger and better. I like this last year I saw the new Whirlpool plant that replaced a Whirlpool plant we lost in Fort Smith, Arkansas, mm-hmm. just this last year. State-of-the-art plant, state-of-the-art equipment. They pay their girls about 40 cents an hour. They hire girls at 18, fire them at 25 if they're married, and 30 if they're unmarried, and get them some more 18-year-olds and go again.
Mm.
And don't hire men except for the heavy grease jobs, that sort of thing, because they're considered a distraction in the factory.
Right.
And that's just the way it is in American plants in Mexico.
Now, what's your connection with them, John?
I helped transfer jobs down there for several years. I've played a part in about 1,000 jobs going down there. I was a quality control manager for an automotive supply parts firm.
Wow.
And like I say, if Americans knew what was going on down there, if they could actually see it, they would be frightened out of their minds. The Mexicans are good workers. They have state-of-the-art plants and state-of-the-art equipment. And I know they have state-of-the-art guards with state-of-the-art guns who get very scowling if you start photographing their facilities.
Isn't capitalism wonderful?
It is indeed.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say.
Okay, well, I
appreciate that in.
Yeah, well, thanks, John. I appreciate it. Thanks for checking in. It's the emptying out of the industrial base in this country has really, you know, Prairie 2 writes about this all the time. And, well, a lot of people with a mind toward the economist approach to what has happened here have written about this. But, you know, going back to this thing in Flint, and it's not just Flint, 50 cities will possibly be part of this experiment. Mr. Kildee, the guy who's the... the general manager of the treasurer of Genesee County, which includes Flint. He said he's lived in Flint nearly all his life, and he said he had first overcome a deeply ingrained American cultural mindset that, quote, big is good, end quote, and that cities should sprawl. For example, Flint covers 34 square miles. But he said, quote, the obsession with growth is sadly a very American thing. Across the U.S., there's an assumption that all development is good, that if communities are growing, they're successful. If they're shrinking, they're failing, end quote. But now in Flint, rubbish is picked up maybe once a week. And then it's not very much because there's nobody in the neighborhoods. Roads are decaying. Police are very understaffed. Too few people, not enough tax base to pay for the services. And the consensus, apparently, in the city of Flint, in the city administration, if they don't downsize, they're going to go bankrupt. So they have an authority there, a local authority, that as a result of a state law passed a few years ago, this authority within the city of Flint, or the county, is allowed to buy up houses at abandoned houses at very small amounts of money, and I don't know who gets the money. And then the city has the, once they own them, they have the right to pull them down, to destroy them. So far, they have destroyed 1,100 abandoned homes, and according to Mr. Kildee, another 3,000 need to be demolished. And already, there are streets that peter out into woods and meadows where there used to be, you know, maybe a school or a stoplight or a strip of little stores. Now it's a meadow, woods, no trace remaining of the homes that once stood there. Kildee said, quote, much of the land that we're talking about here will be given back to nature. Maybe people will enjoy living near a forest or a meadow. And he acknowledged that some of his fellow Americans consider his solution defeatist, but he insisted, quote, there was no more defeatist than pruning an overgrown tree so it can bear fruit again. Okay. Yeah, sure. Why not? But I just wonder where all the people have gone. You know, Flint, Michigan at one time was 250,000 people. It's down to around 100,000 now. Where did 150,000 people move to? Where did they go? Seriously. Did they go to the Southwest, to the South? That's where so many of the jobs migrated to in the 70s before they started moving to Mexico in Central America, and then eventually to, Indonesia and China and Vietnam and... I don't know. We're not a country of 150 million people like we were back in the 50s when everybody had a job. We're a country of 300 million. And I just wonder where did everybody go? It's like one of those One Step Beyond television programs from the 60s, right? Welcome back. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. The number here, by the way, is 877-996-2556. And coming up at the, in about 30 minutes, we will be giving away the second free podcast subscription to the Malloy Program. All 10 of these we're going to give away over the next 4 or 5 weeks are courtesy and compliments of one of our listeners who has requested to remain anonymous, but he provided the funds for 10 of them, and we're giving away 2 a week. Next week, we'll be giving them away Thursday because we will not be here on Friday. Gene is calling from Detroit. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thank you very much.
Sure. Where do you live in Detroit?
I live on the border between Detroit and Dearborn.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just north of Ford Road and Ford Motor Company and whatnot.
Yeah, so you're not in the downtown devastation. I'm not talking about Cadillac Square. Yeah. I know Cadillac Square still looks good, but you're not in... you're not down in the downtown section.
Well, it was bad enough. Last year, I had 32 homes in a four-block stretch on my street empty.
Oh, my God.
A few of them have been, they resold them. And I don't know, they could be going to plan on doing the same thing to those people.
How long have you lived in Detroit, Gene?
I came here in 83.
83?
And I'll be leaving because I'm walking away.
Where are you going to go?
Probably to Tennessee.
Tennessee?
Yeah.
Is that where you're from originally?
No, I'm originally from Pennsylvania.
Oh. What have you seen happen in Detroit?
It's just been bad. I've been hit really hard. I haven't worked in since 2006 myself, and I'm flat busted, and I'm not young, and I have no Christmas club, no nothing.
Oh my God, Christmas club! I remember that.
You know, I mean, I have financially, I'm shot.
How do you take care of yourself right now?
Carefully. I'm getting unemployment, but it's about to run out.
Do you rent an apartment or a house or?
No, I have a house I got in '95, and I refinanced it in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God I didn't take one of those arms, or I'd have been in worse shape.
Are you going to be able to sell your house before you go?
No, and even I mean, they're giving these houses away.
Man, what are you going to do with yours?
Give it back to the bank.
Oh, just say I can't do it, can't pay it.
Yep. I mean, a year ago, they were calling me every day.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't even want to hear from them.
They were calling you about where's our payment?
Yeah.
And they've given up. They don't call anymore.
No, what happened was I lost my unemployment for like about two or three months,
mm-hmm.
And then and they called me all the time, and I jumped through all the hoops, and I got a hold of everybody I was supposed to get a hold of, and it dragged my paperwork around with me, and. Anyway, but nobody, they have no intentions of helping. They got a bunch of programs here, and from my understanding, they've only helped two people.
Wow.
The organization, I mean, the state stuff has only helped two people with their homes. They, as soon as I talked to them, they already told me that they couldn't help me. And the organization I'm with, we've already helped two people.
What kind of work did you do, Gene?
I was an administrative assistant I actually had worked for a number of years for Kelly Services.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I had, most of the time that I worked for them, I worked at the Department of Transportation
right.
for the state.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they couldn't hold on to me anymore because, you know, in fact, I just talked to a friend of mine and they said that they were worried about their job.
What, in the neighborhood you live in, what's it like? I mean, like right now, do you have friends in the neighborhood? Do you still, do you have a club or a place you go, church, synagogue, anything like that?
Yeah, well, there's a neighborhood organization out of a church.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of my state senators or representatives, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
He has, like, once a month, like a coffee clutch in the morning
mm-hmm.
that people go to and complain. But... like I said, it's pretty bad and getting pretty bad.
Do you still have friends in the neighborhood? You've been there for 25 years. Well, in Detroit.
Well, I came here in 1995 to this house.
Right.
I got this
right.
house in 95.
Okay, so almost 15 years. Do you have any friends in the neighborhood? Are they all gone? What?
Most of them are gone. The only one that's still left is the guy that he's an EMS.
Mm-hmm.
He lives kitty corner from me with his family. I got three houses to the left of me that are
empty
and torn up and grass growing is almost up to my knees or higher. And the other two or three houses down the other way that were it was empty last year, they got people in them.
Do you live on a like a side street? Is it a main thoroughfare?
I live I live within a mile of Southfield Freeway, if that matters to you.
Well, no, I just meant like traffic going up and down in front of your house. Is there any?
Yeah, there's traffic.
Yes,
I mean, it's a normal street, but, you know, it's not as... Actually, you're right. It isn't as busy
as
it used to be.
So you're going to leave soon, I take it, and move to Tennessee.
Well, I hope before winter.
Do you have a job?
I wasn't here this last winter.
It was pretty brutal last winter in Detroit. Detroit had a bad winter. Do you have a job, family, something waiting for you in Tennessee?
Yeah, I have some cousins and an aunt that live down there, and that's actually where I went. My uncle passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Not this last March, but the March before, and I got called down there, and I went down once for a week and came back to Detroit, and about a month or so later, towards the end of October, I went down there. And
mm-hmm.
Anyway,
well, it's interesting to listen to what you have to say, Gene. Everybody has a story. You certainly do too. When you do move, I hope you continue to listen and check in with us once in a while, will you?
I'll try. Can I ask a favor?
Sure.
I belong to an organization called the Moratorium Now Coalition.
Uh-huh.
This weekend, I guess you guys didn't get my email or maybe it got blocked out, but we're having a people summit here this weekend.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Send it to me again, and I'll announce it over the air.
Well, yeah, it'd have to be tonight because it's
I'll do it tonight. Sunday. Send it to mike@mikemalloy.com, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks, Gene.
All right, bye-bye.
We'll talk again. Take care.
Just like the ones we made before, except this one came from Singapore. I guess we can't make it here anymore. Should I
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Sarge is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Sarge, long time no hear.
Yeah, how you doing, Mike? It's good to hear your voice again, my friend.
Amen.
Hey, you know, you're talking about something that affects the Phoenix area, and it also affects my old home area of Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
The economy, the housing situation, of course, we know about Katrina, and yes, there's still housing problems galore in Mississippi to this day.
Well, you know, one of your old comrades from trying to repair all that, Kate. Remember Kate?
Mm-hmm.
She still emails me. Matter of fact, she came through Atlanta not too long ago. Had a chance to talk with her, and she's back living in the desert now. But anyway, go ahead, Sarge.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, I broadcast on WQRZ FM in Waveland, Mississippi,
uh-huh.
And the guy that has that station is homeless.
Oh my God.
He's won awards for the Phoenix Award for his outstanding service and all, but in April, his temporary housing ended. They won't allow him to qualify for MEMA cottage, and he's homeless, lives in his radio studio, and that's what he's doing. And, of course, out here in Phoenix, it's really interesting, too, because, you know, the second or first largest foreclosure was right here in Phoenix. You got towns mm-hmm. like Gilbert. There are all kind of vacated houses out in that region. You see a lot of people here without work, and I've run into them daily out here. Just people came out here to the desert, think they were going to get a better life, and they're stranded. In the meantime, we have the state legislature here that's worried about teaching ethnic courses in college and schools, so they're worried about that. And cutting education, and they've actually fallen below Mississippi in education.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're 50th. And, so.
Where all those people go, Sarge, who lost their homes in the Phoenix area? Where all those people, where'd they go?
You know, I've been asked that question. In fact, Monique and I were talking about it, and she said, you know, these people, they're losing their homes. Where are they? Because honestly, I have no idea. I know the homeless has increased. You've got a lot more animals out here that have been just abandoned.
Right.
And the animal shelters are overflowing. I had one on my show not long ago where they rescued horses and they turned up rescuing dogs because of foreclosures, and they turn away about twice as many as they take in.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know. It's crazy. And yet, you know, here we have a problem of being misguided. The education budget has been cut. They're talking about the state violating the Constitution, the state legislature, putting money, making the cities pay more for education that the state's supposed to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got this nut brain Tom Horn who puts this bill through saying that we're not going to teach ethnic studies anymore. So, that's what happens when you let the Republicans run wild.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, stay in touch, Sarge.
Yeah, good talking to you, buddy. Hang in there.
All right. Take care. Take care of yourself. I wonder. I do. I don't know why I am kind of stuck on where did the people go? Where did the people go? You know, everybody has to be someplace, right? And that maybe Prairie too, if you're still listening, maybe he's got some ideas about where everybody goes. I read stuff online about families have moved in with relatives, or they've moved to residence hotels, motels, or they've been forced to live in in a camping, what would normally be a camping situation, but it's no longer camping. It's where they actually live. And I know the homeless shelters and places here in Atlanta are just bursting. I wonder how much more of this we can we can experience without having the country explode. I'm serious. I just wonder how much more of this, of job loss and income loss and essential services gone, and the mortgage crisis. Man.
Okay, podcast trivia when we come back.
Okay. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Losing hope is easy. When your only friend is gone, and every time you look around, well, it all just seems to change.
Yeah, just leave those two on.
But hanging on is easy. When you've got a friend to call, when nothing's making sense at all, you're not the only one who's afraid.
It's time once again for podcast trivia on the Malloy Program. Tonight's winner will receive a brand new Cadillac. No. Tonight's winner will, second winner will receive a 1-year gift subscription to the Malloy Podcast. Malloy Podcast and whatever else comes with it. Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag. If you'd like to hear the F word and the BS word and the C word and the D word and the all these nasty, nasty words, you can that come courtesy of people who like to email me with telling me what they really think about me. We put that up in a video form. So the podcast subscription includes the podcast, obviously, and just ones and ones more of things. You know, of course, it's going. There will be more stuff, I promise. Just hang in with us, all right? All right, so we're going to take Carla here, who is driving in Indiana. Where are you going, Carla?
I'm in Illinois.
Oh, Indiana, Illinois.
Well, I went from Wisconsin to Illinois. So.
Oh, I see. And you're heading towards Indiana?
Yep, I'm in towards Indiana.
Okay, good. All right, Carla, are you ready to play the game here to see if you can win a podcast? Why do you want a podcast?
Well, I somehow managed to raise a daughter, which I don't understand, who became a conservative, and I'd like to get her to listen to the real truth of what's going on in this country.
Oh, my goodness. Where does your daughter live?
Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Really? And
yep.
And she became a conservative on her own, or hung out with the wrong people, or what happened?
I just wonder if it's rebellion against me.
Oh, is that? Yeah, well, that'll happen, you know.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then there's still hope, because if you know, eventually she'll figure out, well, Mom was right, and she'll...
Well, I would think that she would, because, she and her husband are in lower income people, and, you know, health care and everything with four kids is absolutely killing them. And I would think that she'd quit voting against her own best interests.
Boy, there are an awful lot of people in this country who do just that, don't they, Carla? Man.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Are you ready to play?
Well, I did really good on the first ones. I got 3 out of 4 right. Let's see if I can do it when it's my turn.
Okay, good enough. All right, here's your question. This is multiple choice.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your question. What did George W. Bush say to reassure people about his pick for Supreme Court Justice and former advisor Harriet Myers. Remember her? What did he say?
I do.
A, she's the most fair person I know, fairer than Cheney even. She's the fairest of them all. B, she's got the best heart of anyone I know, just a super strong heart. She's the heartiest person I know. C, she's a decider, and I'm the decider, and I decided she's the best decider for the job. And D, she is plenty bright. She doesn't just kind of opine about things.
I think that he said D.
D? Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
All right, well, guess what? That's not the right answer. No, no, it is the right answer. All right, Carla, great. Way to go. That's right. He said, I remember that. She doesn't just kind of opine about things. I had never heard the word opine used like that. It's kind of an archaic word.
That's what struck in my, as soon as you said it, I remembered him saying it.
Yeah, hold on just a second. Yes, Catherine.
And the thing that got me about it was not only was it an odd word, but it was actually one of the few correct adjectives that he could have selected out of all the odd words
out
there.
What's a verb?
True. Verb. You're right. Because you know what? Supreme Court justices do opine. That's all they do. I think their job is to be opiners.
I thought it was to interpret the U.S. Constitution.
Well, yeah, but they give their opinion about the constitutionality of various things. And so it just cracks me up when he says, she doesn't opine. And that's kind of what she needed to be doing.
Right, all right.
So anyway.
All right, well, Carla, you won. Let me put you on hold. Kathy will pick up in a second and get the pertinent information. And
Thank you.
I hope between the two of us we can rescue your daughter, okay?
I hope so, too. Thank you very much.
All right, Carla, thank you. All right. Two winners tonight. Wow. That's just outstanding. Irish Dave sent me an email here that... He said, Mike, tonight's not so fun fact. Back in the day, the highest percentage of home ownership in any American city was, wait for it, Detroit. Yeah, it's just a bleeding shame. What has happened in Detroit. If you're familiar with Detroit, if you remember it back in the day. All right, the phone call from the woman in Detroit, she has sent me this information. It is a People Summit and Tent City, June 14th through the 17th in Grand Circus Park, Detroit, Michigan. It says 4 days of active resistance, political discussion, and strategizing for working people and the poor. It goes on and on, but here's the website, peoplessummit.org, and apparently there's a video there too. Peoplessummit.org. Peoples, double plural. Peoples with an S, summit.org. I'll bet my friend Peter Werby is gonna be at this. Peoplessummit.org. Check it out. I realize you're not going to, you know, leave home and go do this, but you may be in the Detroit area. And if you are, you know, it might be worth your time to go. And if you just want to see what they're about, go to peoplessummit.org. Okay? All right. Oh, my goodness. Who is this? Is this... it's Marge calling from Maryville, Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Good evening.
Hey, how you been? Where you been?
Oh, just putzing around.
The
folks in Detroit are kind of unhappy tonight.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
Yeah, they're well, on top of everything else, the Red Wings lost.
Oh, well, that's insult to injury, right?
No kidding.
Yeah. So
you thought D-Day was last week.
You would have.
D-Day is today.
D-Day is today?
Like in digital.
Oh, that D-Day.
You know, last Thanksgiving, I went out and I bought a brand new flat-screen television that's supposed to be digitally whatever.
Right.
Then today when I was doing a scan and it wasn't scanning and I got out my little manual and it says, it's digital in most cases.
Well, are you on a cable system or a satellite system?
No.
Well, then you need the converter box.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm hoping that the air turns blue all around all these stupid politicians that, you know, sign this bill and turn the telecommunication folks loose on the public. You know, once again, we have, you did a heck of a job, Brownie, only this time it's in the FCC.
But are you talking about switching from analog to digital?
Yep.
Well, you know, you can get one of those converter boxes, yep, I think, free, can't you?
Well,
What? And let me tell you, if you get one, Marge, you...
Three times I sent for that damn card to get one for free.
Yeah.
And I kept getting an application back, but I never got any card.
Well,
so I just went to the hell with it and I went out and bought one.
Yeah, you bought a converter box.
Yeah, so I've got the box, but now I got to get my friend, local electrician, to hook it up for me.
Well,
But I'm sitting here thinking today, you know, when that was not going through, and I thought, well, maybe there's going to be some justice in this after all. Right now it's a summer, there's no campaign going on.
Right.
But maybe if they're so screwed up and the broadcast, signal doesn't come through fast enough or well enough,
right,
then these broadcasters that claim so much, that want so much money from the politicians won't be able to collect it because their signal is not going to reach anybody. And they're going to have to do something that they should have done a long time ago.
And that is?
You know, fix the signal so it's not a monumental job and whatnot, so that, you know, everybody can watch their television set besides the commercials for the campaign.
Well, you got it figured out.
I'm hoping I got it figured out.
Yeah. How are things in Maryville? Do you have abandoned houses in Maryville, Indiana?
Well, there's a certain amount, yeah. You know, the thing, oh, God, I got to tell you. The town of Maryville worked out a deal with a local garbage company.
Yeah.
Supposedly, you know, the residents would get a cheaper rate because we're all going to have the same company.
Right.
But I don't know who the hell wrote that contract. Because even if somebody lost their house and the house is empty, or it's a rented house and once again the house is empty.
Right.
If nobody's living there, somebody's got to pay the garbage company. Otherwise, they'll put a lien on that house.
Oh, my God.
You know, when I heard that, I thought, who the hell was the genius that wrote that contract?
Oh, Marge, it's just getting bizarrer and bizarrer.
You think?
Yeah, I think.
Geez.
All right, dear, I got to go. There's the music.
All right, take care.
You have a good weekend.
You too.
We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Thanks to the crew tonight and this week. Usual gang of Outlanders. Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and Kathy Bay. Tom writes in about, answer the question, where did they go? This is a part that just spooks me. Where did all the people go? Where did all the people go? Tom writes, I know that some are moving in with family. I live in New York, and I know of several people who have moved in with family and friends. One of these people was in his 50s, used to live in Arizona, who moved to Long Island to borrow a room that used to be used by my friend's daughter. Humiliating as it may be, he's getting by, as I suppose many other are as well. There's another side to this, Tom writes. I'm in my 30s and watched the median price for a home in Long Island go from around $190,000 in 1998 to over $470,000 8 years later. essentially pricing an entire generation out of the possibility of owning the American dream. The economic crash isn't all bad. Some economists will call this a necessary deleveraging, where we get rid of all the Chinese debt finance excess to help fuel the insanity of the last 10 years. Japan has experienced this for 12 years, and they have survived. Maybe we don't need $70,000 SUVs, heated swimming pools, and iced cappuccino makers. Maybe what America is going through is similar to what a teenager would experience if their credit cards were taken away and they had to live within their means. It may seem like the end of the world, but as long as we have our health, we'll get through. Of course, it would be nice if we could have single-payer health care and a social safety net to catch those who fall through the cracks. Regardless, this isn't the worst that the country has seen, and I think we will get through it. Maybe we can learn something and start saving like they did in the 40s. That would be the 1940s. Tom. Yeah. I certainly subscribe to the idea that getting through this is key. And as he points out in the big picture, we still haven't hit that horror of the Depression in the 30s, I don't think. I mean, I wasn't here. I don't know. But from what I've seen, what I've read, but it's not good. Steve is calling from Portland, Oregon. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me? Because I can barely hear you.
Yeah, I hear you fine. Let me see.
Okay, great. Listen, just to establish credentials, I jump up and down every night when I listen to you talk about Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Hannity and all the rest of these fascist bastards. So we're on the same page there. But isn't it about time we stopped making excuses for Obama and recognize that this guy is just another corporate fascist? He's more charming, he's more intelligent, he's better looking, but he's just another corporate fascist.
Well, I've stopped making excuses, but I'm not ready to label him like that. He may be, but I'm still waiting to see if what he's doing, where is he in his sixth month in office? I'm waiting to see if what he's doing is not an attempt to expose all the filth that needs to be exposed without putting his own life at risk. I don't know.
Categorically disagree with that. This guy is the most powerful man in the world. He could have ended the war in Iraq. He could have ended the war in Afghanistan. He could have ended wiretapping. He could have ended.
Wait. Why do you call him the most powerful man on Earth? I mean,
because he is the single most powerful man on Earth. Everybody
okay, wait a second. Wait a second. What was John Kennedy? Was he the single most powerful man on Earth when he was the president?
Well,
No. Go with me here. Was he or
okay.
Wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Okay, how long did it take to kill him?
About 2 years.
Okay, let me ask you something else. How did his power protect him? He was the most powerful man on Earth. He had at his disposal probably, 15,000-20,000 nuclear-tipped missiles. How did that help him?
Let me ask you one, Mike. What would you do in his position?
Whose position?
If you were in the White House right now, what would you do?
Probably exactly what he's doing. I wouldn't be in that position. I've come to realize that if you run for president, God help you if you get elected. Because I don't care what you start out as. Once you get there and realize, I'm guessing at all this because I don't know. Once you get there and realize, you know, somebody said to me, I think it's funny. But the first thing they do with a new president, whether it's Barack Obama or John McCain or Bill Clinton or George Bush, the first thing they do when you become president, they take you into a room after the inauguration ceremonies and all the balls and the dances and the fancy meals. They take you into a room, they being the permanent establishment, not people elected to office, just them. They take you into a small office, pull the shades, push a button, a screen pops up, and they start some sort of digital projector, and they turn the lights down. And what they show you is the Zapruder film. And when they're finished, somebody says, "Mr. President, any questions?" Now, whether or not that's true, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, Steve. Whether that's true or not is beside the point. The metaphor there, or is that an analogy? works for me. I'm not ready to call him a corporate fascist yet. Maybe he is. I know even back during the primaries, there are a lot of people that used to listen to this program and don't anymore because they feel that they were betrayed because of the position I took on Obama, which was I said I supported him. But I got a lot of emails back then that said, you know, you're just a fool. You're naive. You know, shame on you. Someone your age, your experience, you're going to vote for Obama. You're going to support Obama. You're going to do this. Shame on you, Malloy. Shame on you. I'm out of here. Okay. That's true. That's very true. Shame on me because I supported Obama. And yeah, I'm naive and blind and stupid because I don't see that he's a corporate fascist even now. And he may be. I'm just saying, I'm not ready to make that call yet. And I appreciate the clarity of people who can make that call at this point. So, I'm sure we'll keep talking about it. Have a great weekend, okay? Thanks for hanging out. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, wherever you are.
I'm Felix.